IATSE Local 891 presents Apple Box Talks,
the podcast where we get to talk to the very best in entertainment, the artists and technicians of 891.
From prep to post and everything in between, we create worlds on screens of all sizes. Welcome to Apple Box Talks. I'm Crystal.
And I'm Hillary. This week, we hear from the department that patches up our wounds and keeps us all fed. Today, we welcome a first aid craft service member with a long list of credits to their name, like The Killing, Deadpool, and The Flash.
This week, taking their seat on the Apple Box is Amy Miller. So pull up an Apple Box and let's talk. Welcome, Amy.
Hi, good morning.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us, what does first aid craft services look like?
Well, it's a very busy department. We, you know, put in long hours. We, you know, have to have a sense of urgency about, you know, getting ready in the morning and, you know, and try to always be very pleasant with cast and crew and just look after everyone.
Yeah, the sense of urgency, I'm guessing, is because everyone would like their coffee as soon as possible, first thing in the morning.
Exactly.
But also the first aid side of things, that's really important. You're often there when the first person is on set, right?
That's right, yes.
So day in the life of Amy.
Well, it starts pretty early, earlier than other people, because as first aid attendants, they want us there if there's going to be more than six people, essentially. So especially when trucks are being unloaded, but even when you have a long pre-call for hair, makeup, costumes to get cast ready, they'll have us in sometimes hours before the general crew call.
Your past work history is quite interesting because it really does combine the craft service side of your job with the first aid side. Can you explain where you started in your career outside of the film industry and how those skills paved the way for you to get in?
Yes, definitely. So I started, you know, when I was 21, I had some friends that were tree planting in the summers when they were going to school. And I thought, oh, that sounds like a lot of fun. I want to try that out. And so I spent three summers planting trees in northern Alberta and British Columbia. And then I became interested in the cooking, the camp cooking side of things. So I ran the kitchen for the tree planting company for eight seasons. And during that time, I started to get some contract work in mineral exploration camps. And for those jobs, you had to be the first aid attendant as well, because they wanted somebody that wasn't going to be at the work site, the drill site, because in the diamond drilling camps especially, that was usually where the accidents would happen. And it was part of their safety plan that the cook was never at that same location. So I took my occupational first aid certificate for the first diamond drilling camp that I went to cook for. And yeah, I loved it. I just really, I loved the two things, actually. Mm-hmm.
So for a lot of people, first aid, they think about Band-Aids, but the reality of what you provide on set is significantly more. Can you talk a little bit more about the scope of what you're looking out for when you're there?
Well, it's interesting. I think we're moving into a new era where we do have actual safety managers on set. But as first aid attendants, I think a lot of us are looking out for safety hazards as well. But also we're there for the comfort, you know, to just keep people feeling, you know, healthy and happy to get through their day. So it's also, you know, some, I think, emotional support sometimes. You know, there's a mental health first aid aspect to it as well. And, you know, unfortunately, occasionally there are bigger accidents or medical emergencies that happen. You know, if you put a large number of people together, some people have some medical conditions. You know, there's a range, you know, of things that happen. And we've certainly had some, you know, heart related issues. I had someone with a stroke one time. So it can be a really wide variety of situations that you're dealing with and you just kind of don't know. So I think a lot of us maybe, you know, we want to help and we like that element of just having to just go and deal with whatever comes up. Maybe, you know, you can't always plan for it. So yeah, just need to be prepared. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why I ask is because a big part of this podcast is to demystify what each of the different departments do. And a consistent thread we've heard is people saying, oh, I thought I knew what they did, but I'm realizing how much more there is to it, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's interesting you mentioned the mental health aspect as well, because I was reading in your pre-interview that you had mentioned the most challenging project as of late that you've worked on was the scriptures when COVID hit. And so tell us how that changed how you needed to work and what you needed to look out for and just in general, overall, you know, health of the crew.
Well, I had to really look at my crew. I had three, sometimes four assistants on that crew, and I had to be very mindful about how everyone was working and make sure that everyone was following the protocols and that we were all distancing and that as best we could. It was hard because we were in a, you know, fairly enclosed space. So the COVID protocols did change how we did craft service significantly, as well as the first aid, because, you know, now we had to fully gown up with a shield, gloves. We always wore the gloves, you know, and of course the KN95 mask was, we needed to, you know, full PPE going into any first aid situation and make sure that you took the time to properly sanitize that first aid room after every patient was treated. So on that production, I did end up having a separate first aid attendant after about 3 weeks, I think, because it was just too much. You know, there were things like in the past where if someone came for a headache and they wanted some Tylenol or Advil, you would give them what they requested, make a note in your little record book, and off they would go. But now it was, okay, well, a headache is a COVID symptom. Do you have any other COVID symptoms? And calling our COVID compliant officer, who was the a registered nurse, and then she would decide whether that person needed to be removed from the worksite. So it really changed the first aid especially, but also the craft service. You know, now I felt like we were all of a sudden a big department, whereas before I would have one, sometimes two on a really big show, on a really big day, three assistants, but now I had, you know, four and five. And just, you know, managing things like making sure everyone got their COVID test and we had a pass card system in the morning. And I felt like I was much more in a supervisory role than I had been in the past. And, you know, just, I think previously, I feel like my job might have been a little bit more fun in the past because we would set up this beautiful table, this beautiful spread, and I would tell people when they were asking about my job that it was kind of like I'm hosting a party all day long. You know, you're making these beautiful platters and, you know, you're, you know, trying to find all the best cheeses and crackers and staying on top of all the seasonal food products. And, you know, it was really quite different. And now we had to prepackage everything, had to be portioned. It had to be covered and packaged and prepped in a different way. So it was very time consuming. And so our crews did get bigger. But like I said, just the overseeing, making sure that everything was done in a way that I was confident was going to keep the crew safe and not have any COVID related issues or other health issues as well. So, mm-hmm.
So for people who aren't familiar with life on a film set, what's the difference between craft service and catering?
Well, the caterers serve hot breakfast, generally for an hour or hour and a half before the general crew call. And then they serve lunch six hours after, usually. Sometimes we go into meal penalty. I guess that's another situation, you know, when we're filming and they just want to keep going to finish a scene or wrap an actor. But and so craft service is all of the snacks in between the catered meals, because our days are generally 12 hours of filming is what they're kind of based on. So there, you know, needs to be a significant amount of snacks available for people if they, sometimes they might miss breakfast or work through lunch. So we do, you know, try to have some substantial things for them. Right in between breakfast and lunch at the 3 hour mark, we serve sandwiches, which also in the winter would include soup, and in the summer more salad, lettuce wrap items. So we try to have a variety of options available for everyone with every possible dietary need pretty much all day long.
It can't be easy.
Well, you know, there's always, you know, new things that you're trying to work with. You know, I have a growing number of people on the keto diet now. And so that's, I thought I had that pretty figured out, but you know, there's some people don't eat bacon and some people, you know, don't eat certain things. So it can be, you know, challenging, but we just try to have something for everyone and brighten the day whenever we can.
So you worked on a project where your craft service table was set on a barge on a whale watching boat.
Yes. Well, actually, so we had my craft service truck and the setup was on the barge, but they were filming. It was on the Big Year and it was a movie about bird watching. I don't know if anyone saw it. I thought it was a lovely movie, and I feel like it didn't get the viewership that it deserved. We had a pretty big cast, and it was just such a fun project to work on. We were all over BC, in Tofino, in the Okanagan. We even went to Dawson City in the Yukon. But that, I think it was 6 days straight that my truck was on that barge. And so we would make our sandwiches and things, and then we would load everything that we could onto a whale watching boat, and we would go and try and meet the picture boat. And so sometimes, so they would be filming, you know, with about 60, sometimes more people on the boat, and they would get this incredible flock of birds and sometimes seals following along because they would be, you know, chumming. And it was quite incredible. But there were days when we would have these sandwiches ready to go and we would be on the whale watching boat for an hour and a half, just waiting until they cut and said, okay, you can come in with the sandwich. Just now. And so we were in some pretty high swells, and I remember my assistant was, you know, feeling seasick. Luckily I didn't have that happen, but yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and you'd mentioned 110 locations in 55 days, so you're averaging two locations a day, really, right?
Yes, it was. I don't know if I could do that now. That was 10 years ago, so yeah, really hard show, but a lot of fun.
So how would you summarize your department's motto in a sentence?
One sentence. Oh my goodness. Let's make this day better.
Awesome. So you mentioned, I mean, you're at a more senior level in your career at this point. You know, you've chaired the First Aid Craft Service Department. You mentioned, you know, managing at least six other people on scriptures. So can you tell us, what is it that you look for when you're putting together people?
Yes, absolutely. I am looking for people that are customer service oriented, that can, you know, sometimes people might come to us and they're having a bad day. And I'm looking for someone that will try to turn that around and not make that situation worse. So I would say especially now that we have changed to serving everything to the crew, I really need strong service people. But also I want people that are comfortable with first aid and that have some food knowledge and are willing to work hard. Our department is a very hardworking department, so that's pretty important.
What's the biggest crew you've ever had to make food within in a day?
I was actually trying to think about that, and I think it was 330. 330.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of sandwiches.
Most definitely. Most people that get into film have sort of a passion for actual film or television, or, you know, there's something that draws them in. Is there anything, you know, anything that inspired you to kind of get in, or any sort of filmmakers you wanted to work with, or anything related that way?
You know, it actually wasn't that drew me in. It was just that it sounded like a lot of fun to me, and I liked the camaraderie of working with a large group of people and just the variety. But along the way, I have met some people that I still sometimes when people ask, oh, who's the biggest star you worked with, or who is the person that you most wanted to work with? And sometimes I'm amazed that I got to work with those people, like Harrison Ford. And, you know, he landed his helicopter on the Age of Adeline and came right to my truck looking for some soup. So that was a lot of fun.
We worked on that together. Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
So how would you describe yourself and your career in a sentence for someone?
I would say that I am hardworking, always willing to adapt. And I think I've been very fortunate in meeting the right people at the right time. But also just that I rose to the challenge, because things are always changing in the film industry, and you just have to be able to roll with it and not expect any day to go exactly the way it was planned. So did I answer the question?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. It's an adaptability factor. You know, every department has it. It's just different, mm-hmm. you know, for every department. But that common thread of, you know, having communication skills and having that sort of self-motivated attitude is extremely important, especially to, you know, moving up the ranks, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So from people listening to this, like, most people who cook for 300 people are doing it in a commercial kitchen with 20 other people helping them. Can you speak a little bit to what that looks like when you're in a food truck?
Well, we're not cooking so much. I would say that when I started, we were really making a lot of the food. But as the crews have grown and the job has changed, the table and the things that we need to have available have grown. So we are using a lot of catering companies and wholesale bakeries. You know, there's a deli and produce market that many of us use on Commercial Drive, where we can phone in our order. And they're just wonderful. They handpick the very best quality and, you know, always make sure to let us know what's available locally and in season. And
is that the Italian market? The Italian one?
It's Santa Barbara Market.
Okay.
I love him.
Yeah, they have a great deli and produce as well. So, you know, we have to find these suppliers that can really support us, you know. For me, I like to have a good coffee roaster. I'm currently serving Moja, but considering a change to someone on set who's in the camera department that started roasting beans in the Okanagan Anarchy. Can I make a little plug for Jesse?
Oh, why not?
Anarchy Coffee. He just gave me some to try at home, and it's really, really, really nice tasting coffee. So I might make a switch.
I love that, you know, what you bring to your job has so much passion behind it. Like, you're not just going to the supermarket and buying a package of 12 muffins and sticking them on a table. You know, you're being thoughtful about where you're getting things and how they taste. And what really stood out to me, one thing that you said was, if I wouldn't eat it, I'm not going to serve it. You know, there's just a certain level of standard to what you're doing. And it's fantastic.
Oh, thank you, Crystal. No, that is very important to me. Actually, my husband and I were talking, and I think I said maybe what I just said now, that, oh, it's timing and luck. And he said, no, it's not. It's because you remember what people like and what they don't eat. And, you know, after years, you still remember, you know, people's favorite things. And so there is something to that too, you know. I think just really caring about the crew and wanting to make their day go better.
Yeah, it can really set you apart, especially when you're looking for your next job, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes. So I do have to give a little shout out to Honey's Donuts in Deep Cove, because I think that they may have been the reason that I've been hired a few times. So
I wouldn't be surprised.
We had Honey's every Friday on Scriptures, and that was what a lot of the crew looked forward to. They would tell me that I didn't want to get out of bed today, but I thought about that Honey's donut that would be there for me when I got there. So,
So 891 offers a lot of training programs that we encourage our members to take advantage of. Is that something you've been able to do in your time with 891?
Yes, I have actually. I actually, when I was chair, I organized and participated in a mental health first aid course. And I did take the Train the Trainer course. I've done the anti-bullying and harassment course. Oh, and I did do the negotiating course that was formerly called the Art of the Deal. Can I say that?
I think so.
I can say that. I think they changed the name. But it was, I recommend every member that I'm talking to, when they ask about tips on negotiating, I tell them when that course comes up, take it right away, like sign up right away, because it fills up so fast. So, and it was really a valuable course for me to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just for anyone listening, we have base rates in our master agreement based on, you know, a myriad of factors when a show comes and signs with our agreement. And you can always negotiate above that rate. So, but you'll never get anything below it.
That's true. Yes.
So mm-hmm. Negotiating can be very important.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious what your thoughts are looking forward for First Aid Craft Services about sustainability. And as the film industry grows in this age of everything being packaged or portioned, or how do we find that line for keeping this in a more sustainable way?
I have been thinking a lot about that, because when I started, and the environmental side of things was always very important to me. So I never used styrofoam. Right since I started, I used compostable cups. They cost more money, but I think I was fortunate in meeting people that felt the same way, that really cared about the environment and wanted set to be as green as possible. So we had eliminated the plastic water bottles. I mean, to a small degree, they're still there, excuse me, for cast, and there's certain situations where we do need to have those, but that just seemed like a really easy thing to eliminate and go into the compostable cup or the reusable, refillable water bottle. And in all of the cutlery and even the clear, they look like plastic, you know, water cups and things that we put our fruit cups and veggie cups in, but they're made from corn. And sometimes if they're just like in the sun, in a sunny spot, they'll start to biodegrade. So it works. But I know that even just creating those products does, you know, add some warming elements. So if we can use less of them, it would be better. Even I know some of the bowls that I had that had a separate lid, I've changed those out for a hinged compostable. They're called a hamburger box. So whenever I can use that, and they're not great for really liquidy things because they tend to, compost in your hand. But we do need to, think about using those types of products wherever possible. So if things don't have to be packaged ahead of time and sit, then we can, scoop or tong it into that and serve it that way. Then that's, I think we'll go to maybe napkins in the future, handing things off in a napkin. It's a challenge for sure, but I know that we've risen to many challenges, so we're figuring this one out as well.
Have you ever been curious about being a part of any other department on a film set?
Yes, and I still think about it sometimes. I really always felt like I would have liked to have been in the costume department, and the set super on the show that I'm on has said, let me know anytime, we'll take you on. And it could still happen. I could still have another career in me, I suppose. But early on, I did buy a truck, which was a significant investment. So I think at that point, it just seemed like, okay, I'm invested in craft service now. And as the job has grown and the kit has grown and the truck is more commercial, and with COVID, I just built a trailer with serving windows and full commercial kitchen. So it feels like I'm there for a little while. But I think I will make it to the costume department one day. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and just for anyone listening, you can apply to a second category if you're a member in any other category. So if you wanted to check out any other departments, you could certainly do that. You mentioned having a truck, and yours sounds quite elaborate, quite complicated. But not all first aid craft service folks need a truck or have a truck, right?
That is true, because especially these days, and I can't imagine going back to the way it was before with a big self-service buffet style setup. We have a lot of assistant positions in our department now, and also first aid positions. Some people feel very passionate about first aid and are not so interested in the craft service side of things. Food prep doesn't interest them. Customer service doesn't interest them. And they're really strong first aiders. So we always like to have those people on board as well. But as far as craft service assistants, there are many people that never want to be a department head to key a show. It's a lot more responsibility as a department head. And I've even had senior members come that were keys for their entire career, and now they say it's too much for me. I'm really happy to come out and assist someone. And of course, they have a wealth of knowledge and are a really valuable asset to have on your team. So
I think you've touched on something important, that as the industry has developed, historically, people would talk about it being like the Wild West. People would just go in, do their thing, and leave. But now we're becoming increasingly regulated and increasingly needing to comply with things outside of our industry. How has that affected first aid craft services?
Well, as far as first aid, I mean, everyone always had to have their valid occupational first aid, the level 3 ticket. So that hasn't changed. I mean, the course has changed over the years, but obviously you need to have a valid certificate to perform first aid on a film set. But for the craft service side of things, definitely, it was before my time, but some of my friends started when people would do craft service out of a van or the back of their, Jeep kind of thing. So
campers, I remember seeing campers.
Yes, yes. I started in 2005. So people already, there were some motorhomes actually still around then, but most people went to a Grumman style truck or, Yeah, most people went to, or the kind of one ton, some people even have 5 ton trucks that they've put commercial kitchens into. And so Hillary worked together with our department getting the fire certification for all of the food trucks, which is a pretty big deal. Before that, we had the electrical certification. Like nobody had these things. And so I think it just happened one day on a set, an electrical inspector went by and saw some things he didn't like. And, you know, all of the trucks now have this electrical certification, which I think it's really good for our industry. I know that there were some fires, and I think some of them may have been related to cooking equipment and some of them to electrical. So not just in craft service vehicles, but in, I think, hair makeup trailer on one production. There have been a few over the years. So I know some people are not happy about the regulation, but I think it's better. It makes us all just be aware of safety, and it makes the production safer. So it's a good thing for all of us.
Yeah, no, I think that's key, because we, as a local, want to put a focus on safety wherever we can, because there's no reason why someone should go to work and not come home. And I think as we look forward in the film industry, safety is going to take different shapes. People have always thought about physical safety, but we need to make that bigger now and outside of just ourselves. So,
well, if you had one piece of advice to someone who called you up and say, hey, I'm brand new, I'm really interested in your department, what should I do?
Well, I would, first of all, just talk to them, spend some time. And I have had people come to set, you know, family members of someone in another department. Actually, one of my assistants who has been with me since the end of season 2 on The Flash, and we're now on season 8, is the sister of a cast driver on the show. And, you know, and she... her sister just kept saying, I think you would love my sister. She would be so great. And at the time I was crewed up. I had, you know, everyone that I needed. But she was very persistent. And I said, okay, why don't you bring her by one day? This is obviously pre-COVID, because now, you know, we can't have visitors on set, which is unfortunate. And her sister, I should mention, had worked in healthcare and long-term care for 30 years. So she had a strong background on the healthcare side of things, which was really great. And so she came to set one day on a studio day, and we talked. I showed her what we did. I gave her a tour of the truck, the table, took her inside the stage. I think she stayed through a hot snack service where we were serving tacos. I remember the day. And then she came out on a night shoot, and I said, just so you know, it's not always like this at a studio where it's pretty relaxed. And, you know, it's a very different energy from being on location downtown on a night shoot with 250 people on set. So she came and she stayed with us the whole night until wrap, from call until wrap. She was there and she worked. But I don't always expect, I don't expect people to do that. If they come and see and have an understanding of what the job entails, and then they would need to get their first aid, their occupational first aid certificate. So people that are coming with a first aid background are maybe more ideal these days, because we do have a new requirement that people have 1 year of level 3 first aid experience to apply as a permittee to our department. So that came into effect, I think, 3 years ago. So that's pretty key. You need to have that first aid course under your belt and a little bit of experience just managing patients. You know, and we do still mentor and walk people through things. I wouldn't throw a brand new person on set on a stressful, you know, first aid situation. You know, I'm always there as the lead and bring someone in as a support. But yeah, that's pretty key.
Do you find you get a lot of folks from from the medical field, like paramedics or that sort of thing?
There are some paramedics in our department, definitely. There are some registered nurses. I think, you know, and some people keep their tickets valid, their license. I know we have a couple LPNs, licensed practical nurses as well. So there are some. I know of one other person that started in the camp cooking in the mining and logging industry as well, very similar to what I did. So yes, there's folks from a pretty wide range of fields coming into our department.
So I think that'll wrap up our interview with you, Amy. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you. And that's a wrap for another episode of Apple Box Talks.
For more episodes and to find your fit in the film and TV industry, check out ourwork.ca.